And welcome back. Achieving prominence in the world of classical music is difficult enough, but when your instrument is the guitar and you have to fight to be taken seriously because of your gender, it's all the more difficult. But preeminent guitarist Sharon Isbin, a multiple Grammy Award winner, overcame these and other hurdles to emerge as critics now proclaim her as the face of classical guitar. She's coming to St. Louis next week to perform at the Radio Arts Foundation Gala. Sharon Isbin joins me now by phone from New York City to talk about her craft and her career. Sharon, it's so nice to have you with us.
It's wonderful to be with you on air.
I didn't know until just before we went on the air that St. Louis has played a very important role in your career.
It actually has, and so has Leonard Slatkin, who has been a wonderful colleague and dear friend for all these years. The first American orchestra to commission a concerto for me was actually the St. Louis Symphony, and it was a work by Joe Schwantner that was written for me and which I premiered with Leonard Slatkin and the symphony.
Well, that's an early start to your career. You've been quite aggressive in going to various composers in various parts of the world to write for you.
Yeah, they're scared when they see me in the same room. They run the other direction now.
No, they don't do that. How many pieces have been written for you?
I've had over a dozen for guitar and orchestra and several dozen of either solo or chamber works that have been written and arranged for me. So it's quite a project, and it's very exciting. The most recent one is by Chris Brubeck, which I just premiered last spring. It's been aired several times on Performance Today all over the country. The world premiere was with the Maryland Symphony, conducted by Elizabeth Schulz, and it's a fabulous work. As you know, Chris Brubeck is the son of the late Dave Brubeck, so it's a work that is steeped in his wonderfully infectious jazz style and with lots of funky and exciting Middle Eastern grooves as well.
The apple didn't fall far from the tree.
Yes. There's a lot of fruit going around here, yes.
How difficult has it been for you, Sharon, to achieve the prominence you have? I know that, you know, that you had to fight to achieve respect for the guitar and also respect for your gender.
Well, when I started, fortunately, I just began as a hobby. Our family lived in Italy when I was 9 years old for a year, and because my older brother had asked for lessons, and when he learned it wasn't Elvis Presley, he offered them to me instead. So I took him up on the offer, began by default, started classical at the age of 9 in Italy, and it was just a hobby, but eventually I got serious about it, and that's, you know, when it's a gradual, very organic process, you don't feel anything is really particularly daunting. You're just on the journey.
However, continuing on that journey and trying to move on into the top of the field, there were obstacles in your way, were there not?
Well, the first was really when we moved back to Minneapolis. I grew up there after Italy. And when I started to enter competitions, I realized that I was the first guitarist to be doing so. These were local competitions, including with the Minnesota Orchestra. And I had to basically convince them to let me do it. And I think I learned pioneering techniques at that time just by having to stand up for the instrument. And eventually I ended up winning these competitions. And the turning point was performing with the Minnesota Orchestra at the age of 14 and discovering that was even more exciting than watching my rockets that I would spend hours building and launching with worms and grasshoppers going up into space. So I decided to switch gears and put my energy into guitar instead.
Oh, there's some video out there. I've seen it of you and the rockets, by the way. And, I'm sure you're well aware of it as well. Why the prejudice against the guitar?
Well, it's a much newer instrument, and Segovia is really the grandfather of it. He's the one who brought it to the main stage and popularized it. And it took time to get composers who were really well-known and respected to write for the instrument. He began that process and was very instrumental in it. And just to not only increase the repertoire, but the level of playing so that it could compete with other instruments.
You know, I have to tell this story. Some people in the other room are rolling their eyes now because they know what's coming. But many, many years ago, I interviewed Andres Segovia. And I asked him the question, when did you begin to play the guitar? And his answer was, in my mother's womb.
I knew you were going to say that.
But I said to him, I said, it's a good thing you didn't play the piano.
Maybe he meant his mother's room, and he was just mispronouncing it.
Well, I don't know, but that was a difficult interview. But he was a very imposing figure.
Yes. Well, I was lucky to have some lessons with him when I was starting at the age of 14, and I think what I carry with me is the amazing experience of sitting just a few inches from him during these lessons when he would demonstrate, and I would hear that beautiful crystalline diamond-like sound that he had. So I kept that in my mind as a model.
Speaking of a diamond-like sound, I'd like to give the audience a chance to hear your diamond-like sound, if you don't mind. And we'll take at least a bit of Waltz number 3 by Antonio Lauro, if you don't mind, and give a folks a chance to hear what you sound like.
Wonderful.
That is our guest, Sharon Isbin, and she is playing there Waltz number 3 by Antonio Lauro. That is so pretty. That is so pretty.
Well, thank you. And Lauro is from Venezuela, and accompanying me on the handheld organic percussion is the late composer and performer from Brazil, Gaudencio Tiago de Mello, who joined me on an album called Journey to the Amazon.
You've played with so many wonderful people over the years, and they called you the face of the classical guitar. Does that put any particular pressure on you to have that kind of a description?
Well, I've always felt a tremendous responsibility because playing the guitar is an instrument that automatically translates to mean that you're constantly breaking boundaries. So if I'm going to be... the first guitarist, for example, to record with the New York Philharmonic, which I was, and I did three concerti from Spain and Brazil and Mexico with them, including the Aranjuez, I really have to always be on my best game because I'm not only representing myself, but also the instrument. And this is true. I feel this every time I get on stage.
The idea of breaking these boundaries is kind of fascinating to me. Beyond the first experience here in St. Louis, how did that come? Was it a very gradual process, or was it something that, there was a eureka moment, if you will, on the part of the world of symphonic orchestras?
Well, I think that having really amazing composers, not only Joe Schwantner, but also Lucas Foss, Aaron Kernis, John Coriano, Chris Rouse, Tan Dunn, and many others write concerti for me that orchestras wanted to play, it became a really fascinating process to watch this really grow into something that became part of the mainstream with the orchestra world.
But you've done so many other things as well. I mean, obviously, you've made your mark there, but you skip genres, it seems to me. I mean, you've played with people like Katy Perry and Joan Baez and many others in the more popular idiom. That can't be an easy thing to do, to move from one to the other as easily as it apparently is for you.
Well, it again happened very naturally, and I was approached by Lorindo Almeida and Larry Coryell from the bossa nova world and the jazz mm-hmm. world to form a trio with them. And that led to 5 years of touring, making a recording. Eventually, I worked with Antonio Carlos Jobim, Tom Jobim from Brazil. And nowadays, I have a trio called Guitar Passions with Stanley Jordan, the jazz player, who invented the tapping technique, and Romero Lubambo, who is one of the foremost Brazilian bossa nova guitarists. And I've also worked with Steve Vai, an album that's called Guitar Passions. They joined me, as well as Nancy Wilson from Heart, and even Steve Morse from the Dixie Dregs. So I think that as long as I pursue what is of genuine musical interest to me and find the kinds of pieces and selections and arrangements that we can all work together on doing what we do best, that the result is something very special and different.
Who approaches whom in these kinds of situations? Do you go to these various people that you've just mentioned, or do they come to you?
It really depends. In the case of Steve Vai, I was actually approached by the Recording Academy, that's the Grammy organization, mm-hmm. to join up with him on an event they were presenting called Nothing But Guitars. And we really hit it off and became great friends and ended up collaborating together. And when I was asked to do a whole week of concerts in Paris at the Châtelet, which is like their Carnegie Hall, they offered to commission a work for me. And I suggested, what about Steve Vai, if he wrote something for the two of us? So things just happen when the opportunities are there. And it's really something that's impossible to predict, but really exciting to be a part of that process.
I know many members of our listening audience are familiar with the fact that you've performed from time to time with Garrison Keillor of NPR. How did that come about?
Well, that began years ago because I'm from Minneapolis, and of course. So it was like, oh my God. And we've kept up a friendship for all these years, and he was actually able to invite me by chance for a show that they did at Town Hall in New York a few years ago, which ended up in the documentary called Sharon Has Been Troubadour that has now aired on over 200 stations throughout the United States, presented by American Public Television and shown on PBS. So that is still ongoing. It began last year, and it's been really wonderful to see that happen. And many of the collaborators are featured in this particular documentary. It's also available on DVD and Blu-ray. Even Joan Baez is on it. In the case of Baez, a British composer with whom I'd worked wanted to write a solo piece for me, and we both came up with the idea of the Joan Baez Suite, which would be something that paid homage to and highlighted many of the songs that she made famous in the early part of her career. So I contacted her to see if that was okay to name it after her, and when she heard the suite, she actually offered to play on the album, which came out called Journey to the New World.
And it won a Grammy.
It did, yes.
And her voice is still in wonderful shape, isn't it?
It is, and she's touring still all over the world at the age of 75. Remarkable person and wonderful human being.
Another great voice, and I want to play a clip here, a great voice that you've performed with is Josh Groban. I'm sure he's very well known, but you were with him at the 2014 Gershwin Prize concert. We'll play just a little clip of that. You accompanied him as he sang. We'll just hear a little bit of it.
She is frequently kind, and she's suddenly cruel. She can do as she pleases, she's nobody's fool. But she can't be convicted, she's earned her degree. And the more she will do is throw shadows at you, but she's always a woman to me.
The voice of Josh Groban and the guitar of our guest on today's program, Sharon Isbin. He has a marvelous voice. I love listening to him.
He certainly does, and it was such a joy to work with him. And this was honoring Billy Joel and an amazing experience.
Again, how does that come about? You were kind of lost there in the little clip that we were listening to by the violins, but how does something like that come about?
Well, actually, you can hear the whole clip if you just go to my website and hook on to the tab for video, and that song will pop up there. It came about because it was Josh's idea to, when he was invited to be part of the Billy Joel tribute, for PBS to have someone arrange for guitar and a voice this particular song, She's Always a Woman to Me. And they contacted me and asked if I would be able to do it, and I said yes, and that's how it happened. It was just literally, I think, about a week before the performance.
I get the impression that you're unlikely to say no when asked to do anything, in any kind of a venue or any kind of musical ensemble.
Well, fortunately, I really tend to be asked to do things that are possible. So I suppose if I had to do something that was really out of my world, I'd recognize it and recommend someone else. Actually, that did happen with an Indian sitar player, because I don't actually improvise in the way a jazz performer improvises. I have to be able to do kinds of collaborations where the arrangements can be structured so that they do their improv and I'm able to follow along.
But clearly you consider yourself an ambassador for your instrument.
Well, it's been exciting to be able to be part of the process of creating new literature and new collaborations and feel that that helps to move the instrument forward. And it's also just fun for me and for the audiences to have a lot of variety.
And that's important, too. You're also teaching, as I understand it, at Juilliard?
Yes, I created their guitar department in 1989. And have had students from over 20 different countries. We offer both a bachelor's and a master's degree. And many of these young people have gone on to become the premier players in their own countries. So it's a very gratifying and inspiring experience for me as well.
Are many of them young women?
Not very many, no. In fact, I have never had, in all these years, study with me at Juilliard, an American woman. All the females have been from foreign countries.
I wonder why that is.
It's just a much newer instrument in the United States, classical guitar, and it really, for years, the people who would gravitate to it were people who were playing rock music and suddenly, say, heard a Segovia album and thought, oh, that's cool, let me learn classical. So since there weren't terribly many women doing that, and still there aren't as many as there are young guys, I think that it's just a longer process of evolution in this country, whereas in Europe, there's more of a tradition.
Well, you know, we're going to have to say goodbye now. I've certainly enjoyed talking to you. And again, St. Louis is looking forward to you coming here on the 8th. You'll be at the Radio Arts Foundation Gala. Sharon Isbin, thank you so much, and congratulations to you for your wonderful talent. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, and I look forward to having my colleagues, Leonard Slatkin, Olga Kern, Cho Lang Lin, Freddie Slatkin, all join me in the Tuesday benefit event.
Looking forward to it. Thank you
so much.
Thank you.